Brown trout, Chinook, and coho salmon are all currently stocked in one or more of the Great Lakes. These fish have helped build the Great Lakes Basin's world-class fishing reputation. However, none of these prized catches are native to the Great Lakes. These fish were introduced to help manage invasive species and to accelerate sport fishing in the region. Over the course of this year, the Department of Natural Resources will stock nearly 19 million fish, including native and non-native species, and here to discuss how Great Lakes fish populations have evolved and how they're maintained is Todd Grischke. Todd is the Lake Huron Basin Coordinator for the Michigan DNR. Todd, welcome.
Thanks for having me this morning.
If I went fishing in the Great Lakes in 1913 then, 100 years ago, what types of fish would I likely have caught, and how is that different from what I might catch today?
Some of it's the same, and some of it's very different. 100 years ago, we were looking at primarily lake trout, native species in the Great Lakes that had evolved with the Great Lakes. And actually, 100 years ago, there was not much recreational fishing. Most of it was either subsistence type, near shore, or commercial. So the recreational fishing and boating that we see today is very, very different than what it was 100 years ago. Today, you know, in addition to lake trout now, we've got many other species. You just mentioned some, Chinook, coho, brown trout, but we've got steelhead, we have Atlantic salmon, and, you know, those are all part of the mix of the sport fishing opportunities that are out there now.
I'm curious, when did the Great Lakes region turn the corner and become really the sport fishing destination that it is today? When did that happen?
Well, it started turning in the 50s due to some exotic species getting into the Great Lakes, alewife, sea lamprey. These exotic species started to change the Great Lakes ecosystem. And by the late 1950s, our lake trout populations were nearly gone. They'd been wiped out due to these invasive species and some overfishing that had occurred, you know, in the early part of the 1900s. So in the 60s then, alewife populations had reached just huge numbers. And for those of us that were around, we can remember piles and piles of these things on our beaches because there were so many of them. And fisheries managers at the time looked to other species they could bring in to help control the alewife and also create sport fisheries. And Chinook salmon from the west coast of the United States was one of the key species brought in. And so by the late 1960s, the boom started. And it's now legendary. I mean, Chinook salmon and coho salmon stocked into the Great Lakes they built entire towns. Communities grew up around these fisheries, you know, boating industry, restaurants, gas stations, on and on and on, all benefited, and entire economies were created around this frenzy of a new sport fishing opportunity.
So is it fair to look at the last half century, let's say, of sport fishing in the not of sport fishing, but of the DNR's work over the past 50 years with regard to the Great Lakes, and view it as an invasive species and then measures taken to address that invasive species? Is that a fair way to look at the history of the aquatic population of the Great Lakes?
Yeah, and remember, we, the Department of Natural Resources, look at stocking as a tool. It's a tool to rehabilitate a native species, such as lake trout. And, you know, lake trout stocking and rehabilitation is still going on. We're still trying to bring back the native species. But it's also a tool to bolster existing populations and create new fishing opportunities. In this situation, it was a management maneuver, an objective being to reduce the invasive species, the alewife, and take advantage of that as an opportunity. So stocking's a tool, and it can be used in different ways. And so while we do create these new fisheries, Chinook and coho and Atlantic salmon, We're also still looking at our native species such as lake trout and walleye, for example, which we stock, to bump those populations up so that at some point they're self-sustaining. And a good example of that is Saginaw Bay over on Lake Huron, where we stocked walleye for many years. And eventually, by the mid-2000s, walleye took off on their own, and we no longer stock.
Yeah.
So,
but I have to ask, if the alewife population is under control, and they were the ones that were so out of control for a while, is that related to the lake trout population? Why is it taking longer to bolster the lake trout population in the Great Lakes?
Well, it's interesting. There is a dynamic between lake trout and alewife that hasn't been understood until in recent times. Alewife contain an enzyme that basically it doesn't allow fish, salmonids, lake trout, for example, to convert thiamine, which is an important nutrient to produce viable eggs.
It's a B vitamin, right?
Yep. And so because alewife were so abundant in the Great Lakes, lake trout were feeding on them, and they were taking in this enzyme, and it was creating a situation where they were just unsuccessful in bringing off naturally reproduced young. What we're seeing now, with the alewife gone, lake trout are starting to convert to other forage fish, other small fishes as prey items. We're starting to see lake trout making a comeback, and we're measuring significant levels of natural reproduction of lake trout now in northern Lake Huron that we haven't seen in decades. So with the alewife under control, lake trout are feeding on other fish. Now they're starting to become successful. And with those alewife gone, we as managers are looking to other species, such as I mentioned steelhead and Atlantic salmon, as fish that we can stock to create other fisheries, and they can feed on forage fish that are not alewife.
We're talking with Todd Grischke, who is the Lake Huron Basin Coordinator for the Michigan DNR. We're talking about the kinds of fish you're apt to find in the Great Lakes and how those populations have varied through the years. Part of your job, obviously, is assessing the numbers between predators and prey. Tell us about that. How do you measure those relationships, and how big a job is that?
It's a big job, and you mentioned a key word, which is relationships. We, as a Department of Natural Resources, work with multiple states, multiple agencies, Native American tribes, Canada, to make these kinds of decisions. And they're partners, really, in the management. And for assessing the forage fish, the prey items that are out there, we rely on one of our partners, the United States Geological Survey, and they have large vessels and the capacity to get out there and measure and provide these numbers and estimates. So with these other partners that I just mentioned, these other states and agencies, we annually and sometimes several times throughout the year get together, evaluate that data, look at what the numbers tell us, and help us make decisions going forward.
Let's talk a little bit more about the Chinook salmon. I take it that the DNR will stock fewer Chinook in Lake Michigan this year. That's an illustration then of how thriving the Chinook population is in that particular lake?
It is. It's a measure of both that, what you just mentioned, and noticing that the alewife population is changing also. When zebra mussels and quagga mussels came into the Great Lakes, they started to take nutrients out of the lake. When that happens, other fish suffer because the nutrients aren't available. So one of the things that we're noticing is that the alewife populations in Lake Michigan are starting to change. There's not a lot of old alewife, which means they're not living a long time. And so we're recognizing the reduction in alewife and also the natural reproduction that's going on with Chinook salmon. As a result, we don't need to stock as many Chinook salmon to provide the same level of fishing that we've enjoyed for the last 20, 30 years.
Understood. Very good. Interesting discussion. Todd Grischke is the Lake Huron Basin Coordinator for the Michigan DNR. We've been talking about fish populations or aquatic populations in the Great Lakes. Thanks, Todd.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
This environmental segment is supported by Michigan State University's Knight Center for Environmental Journalism. More news on the Great Lakes environment is available at greatlakesecho.org.